The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. We're back in Edmond after a busy three-day campaign, taking us to Red Deer in Alberta, and then to Spokane last night. A really successful trip, really the I think the most difficult hurdle in the entire process was getting out of our home on Sunday morning and down to the airport. A 30 or 40 minute drive typically, but we were being pounded by this thunderstorm, and it was raining all the way from the house to the airport. And then we were delayed maybe a half hour once we got to the OKC airport and waited for the storm to pass. But after that, it was beautiful weather all the way through, and just really a successful event each night. The second day, we reported on the first day at Red Deer Monday show from the hotel up there. The second day, we had 110 people in attendance for that second night of the two-day event. 27 of them were non-members, and I think three more signed up for the follow-up Bible study, so bringing the total to, I think, 12 or 13. So a nice-sized group for the follow-up study there in Red Deer. And then last night, we flew to Spokane yesterday afternoon, got settled into the hotel there that was hosting the event. And then the event started at 7:30. We had 107 people attend the pack there in Spokane. And of those, 74 were non-members, which amounted to a 73% follow-through rate. Those who requested tickets and then actually came to the event. Some of these campaigns, we've had maybe 50% or so actually show up after they requested tickets. But this was 73%. This was the highest response rate from non-members of all the PACs since 2017. So we've really been stepping it up with PACs over the past couple of years, and a really good turnout in Spokane. Given the relatively small number of people that requested tickets, of the total there, we had 10 people who signed up for the follow-up Bible study, and we actually went into the event say that there would be a follow-up study, because we just didn't know with a smaller group if there would be enough interest. But we found out right away last night that there was enough interest, and so we have planned a follow-up study, and 10 people have signed up for that. We had people come last night from Oregon, Washington, of course, Idaho, Montana, and even two PCG members came down from Canada. So a really successful event. We went in wondering how it would do. This is the first time that we went to just one city for one night only. And of course, it followed the two-day event in Red Deer. So a very successful one-day campaign in Spokane, Washington. At the end of today's show, we put together a montage taking some of the clips from my lecture last night and putting it together with some of the feedback from those who attended the Spokane campaign. So you won't want to miss the end of the program. That's always a listener favorite, pulling together some of the clips from these campaign events. Well, speaking of last night and the lecture that I gave, I mentioned to them, and I touched on this to some degree on Monday's show, just how that the whole trip, for me personally, was a trip down memory lane. Of course, I've said many times before how that I grew up in Washington, and I reminded those attending the campaign last night of some of that history and all the basketball tournaments and track meets and talent shows that I attended in places like Spokane and Seattle and Tacoma. I was raised in Pasco, Washington. That's in the southeast corner of the state. But we traveled all over the state and beyond. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Boise, Idaho, Portland, Oregon, even as far as Salt Lake City, Utah. These were teen events in the Worldwide Church of God, growing up in the Worldwide Church of God. And of course, everywhere that we went, our caravan, our group of young people, together with the chaperones, we were put up in homes of Worldwide Church of God members. A wonderful upbringing in so many ways. And yet, look at how those that followed Herbert Armstrong, they didn't exactly follow in his steps, but look at how they've revised the history, and they've made it sound like, so many of them, they've made it sound like that you were being tortured by staying in this church. I've quoted this before from Ron Kelly. He was a senior minister in the Worldwide Church of God and one of my instructors at Ambassador College back in the 1980s. And he wrote, this is Ron Kelly writing in September of 1985. He said, "My children have been reared all their lives with a knowledge of God's festivals. Now that some are grown, many of their fondest memories are of keeping the holy days. By observing the holy days with God's people, we have traveled as a family throughout most of the United States and Canada." My wife was talking to one of the attendees last night, and I read this quote to them, and he said to my wife, "You know, I want to learn about these holy days." And so she said, "Well, you ought to go get the pagan holidays or God's holy days, which it's all laid out there for you in that booklet." He said, "I'm going to get that. I want that booklet." Anyway, Ron Kelly in this article, he says, "And through it all, we have never been in debt purchasing excess gifts we couldn't afford. That's because of the tithing system. They never went in debt, even though they were able to travel the world with all of these events, with all of these holy day observances." Mr. Kelly said, "We have grown each year in spiritual understanding and have profited from the education of travel." And then he says here, "No one can ever tell me keeping God's feast is a yoke of bondage and a burden." And yet that's exactly what the Tekachas told the church and the whole world just a few years after Mr. Armstrong's death, that all of those holy days, that God's law, the Ten Commandments, it's just a yoke of bondage. You go back to some of the things that the Tekachas were saying in the late 1980s, the early 1990s, and then by the mid-1990s, they had just completely transformed that church into something that, well, you could see anywhere in the world today. This is from 1996, Joe Tekach Jr. He's writing about his history in the Worldwide Church of God. He said, "Our flawed doctrinal understanding clouded the plain gospel of Jesus Christ and led to a variety of wrong conclusions and unscriptural practices," he said. "We have much to repent of and apologize for." That's all that they did following the death of Herbert Armstrong. They changed all the doctrines, they did away with the work, and they apologized for what they saw as Herbert Armstrong's mistakes. Tekach Jr. says, "We imposed on our members a works-oriented approach to Christian living. We required adherence to burdensome regulations of the Old Testament code. We exercised a strongly legalistic approach to church government." It was so harsh. It was so stern and difficult and legalistic, said Joe Tekach Jr. "That's not the way I remembered it. I certainly remember being taught right from wrong. I certainly remember being taught that if we lived according to God's laws, we would be blessed." And that's true. Mr. Tekach said, "These teachings and practices are a source of supreme regret. We are painfully mindful of the heartache and suffering that has resulted from them." Well, I didn't suffer growing up in the Worldwide Church of God. It was a wonderful blessing. You'll hear in the montage later on in the show just the impact that Spokane as a city had on me. This is the city that brought in 6,000 people from all over the world to observe the Feast of Tabernacles. And I was able to walk through the park adjacent to our hotel, the same park where we had Family Day back in 1984. All those camps I attended, the youth activities, Ambassador College. What a wonderful blessing. All of it was. Joe DeCotch Jr. came along and tried to revise that history and tell everyone that it was just horrible. He said in that 96 article, so to all members, former members, co-workers, and others, all who have been casualties of our past sins and mistakes of doctrine, I extend my sincerest, heartfelt apologies. How do you suppose the PAC event would go if I got up and said something like that? I said just the opposite last night. I tried to explain our history and how it relates to Herbert W. Armstrong. He says, so to all members, former members, co-workers, and others. Well, he makes the apology as I just read, but then he went on to say this, and I invite you to join us in proclaiming the true gospel of Jesus Christ around the world, as even now God is blessing us with renewed growth and vigor in his service. Why, this is exciting, he said in 1996. We're growing. God's blessing us. That's what he wrote back in 1996. And yet, where are they today? A few years ago, I noticed that Forgive Us Our Trespasses article, that 1996 article, it was on the Worldwide Church of God's website, or I guess they changed their name eventually. I forget all of the details. It's been a while since I've looked at some of this history. But this article from 1996, it was there in the archives. And you can click on it and go to the content and see that, well, yeah, it's the same as it was printed in The Plain Truth back in 1996. And for whatever reason, I happened to compare the two and read it through to the end. And everything was there except for that last statement that I just read to you. This statement, as even now, God is blessing us with renewed growth and vigor in his service. They deleted that statement because God wasn't blessing them. They weren't experiencing renewed growth. That church just dwindled down to nothing as they closed the college, as they went off of television, as they stopped all the youth programs. It's nothing today. What I said to those attendees last night is you just compare the two. Look at what happened to the Worldwide Church of God following the death of Herbert Armstrong and compare it to the Philadelphia Church of God. You look back at how we got off and running in 1989. It's pretty incredible history. Well, before I get to that, let me just read to you what it says in 2 Thessalonians 2. You're familiar with this chapter, many of you. One reason Paul wrote this book, 2 Thessalonians, is to set the brethren straight on the events that would occur just before the return of Christ. And that prophecy was fulfilled in part in Paul's day, but it's primarily for us today. Christ didn't return in Paul's day, and so this is for us. Verse 1 says, now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter as from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. So he's talking about the return of Christ and says, look, don't be troubled by dissident literature and all these things that others are saying. This has to happen first, just before the return of Christ. It says in verse 3, let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. So there has to be a falling away, a great falling away, a revolt, a rebellion, an entire church era, in fact, falling away from the truth. Verse 10 says, and with all deceivableness and unrighteousness in them that are perishing, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. It's because they didn't love the truth. They didn't hold on to the truth. Their love waxed cold, as it says in Matthew 24. They let the truth of God, they let it slip away. Notice verse 15. This is 2 Thessalonians 2. It says, therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which you have been taught, whether by word or our epistle. You've got to hold on to those traditions. You've got to stand firm. You've got to stay the course. As I said last night, what good is it if you enter into the race and you get 3/4 of the way into it, or maybe even almost finishing it, 9/10 of the way in, and then you stop, and then you give up. You throw in the towel. You say, I've had enough. We've witnessed this history, a great falling away from the truth. That's now history. That's not even a prophecy anymore. It's prophecy fulfilled. And our work, again, going back to this contrast between the Worldwide Church of God, what happened following the death of Mr. Armstrong, and the work of the Philadelphia Church of God today, the raising the ruins, Amos 9, 11 and 12, God building it as in the days of old. What was it that Tkachuk said in that 96 article after they had made all of these massive changes, after they had destroyed the work? They said, well, God is blessing us with renewed growth and vigor. They had to delete that statement later because it didn't happen. But what you see in the Philadelphia Church of God is different. My father wrote in 2017, God's Philadelphian remnant has worked to rebuild everything that God built through Herbert W. Armstrong. God is using a small group of humble people to fulfill this ruin-raising work. God is raising the ruins. Another individual last night told my wife that he was attracted to that title, the book that we have, Raising the Ruins, because when he saw it, his life, he said, was in ruins. And he thought, well, Raising the Ruins, that sounds interesting. And he started in with his study in the book and said it was fascinating and it's helped to bring him into the Church of God. We're currently in the 30th year of Raising the Ruins. Next month, it'll be 30 years since I read my father's manuscript, Malachi's Message, to God's Church Today. I was the first one to read it, July 16th, 1989. And then 5 months after that, on December 7th, 1989, the Tkachuk administration fired my father for what he had written in Malachi's Message. And thus began the Philadelphia Church of God. Last night, I told those in attendance at Spokane a little bit about our story and how that so much of it was prophesied. when we come back, we'll tell you a little bit about our story. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send in some feedback, don't forget the audio feedback that you can submit on our TDRS page at thetrumpet.com. But you can also email us if you like, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. Watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded, after pledging to follow in his footsteps, methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Now he said, this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed or preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come.
The Trumpet Daily.
Just to go back to that that quote that I read before the break, 2017, my father said, the Philadelphian remnant has worked to rebuild everything that God built through Herbert W. Armstrong. God is using a small group of humble people to fulfill this ruin-raising work. And so how important is that role that we play? Each and every member, each and every coworker, every trumpet reader, every contributor. It started in the smallest of ways. You can read about the mustard seed beginning in Zechariah 4. God says, don't despise the day of small things. And it certainly started small in 1989. I mentioned the first reading of Malachi's message in July. And then after my father was fired on December 7th, 1989, just 12 members, four families, 12 members. I think I came home from AC 3 weeks after that, and I was number 13. Two fired ministers, four families, four young people, and one manuscript. Malachi's message to God's church today, and the whole focus following December 7th, 1989, was on getting that manuscript out. And the only addresses that my father and John Amos had were from Oklahoma, where my father was situated, and Ohio, where Mr. Amos had been previously, before he was transferred to Oklahoma. And so many of you know the story. We sent the manuscript out in mid-January 1990, and that book landed in about 900 mailboxes on or around January the 16th, 1990. The following month, we started the Trumpet magazine, the Philadelphia Trumpet. I mentioned this last night and said, you know, all of you are here. You were invited to this event because you're a trumpet reader. And here we're in the 30th year of the Trumpet magazine. 30 years, an entire generation. Well, that started in the smallest of ways as well. One could hardly call it a magazine. It was more like a few sheets of paper stapled together. And that was the beginning. February 1990. And then about the end of that year, I think it was, I forget if it was November or December, but we bought this little condominium, this little office complex. I think it had six offices. And we thought, at the time, we thought, wow, what are we going to do with all these offices, all of this office space? And over the years, we just kept buying the unit next to us as we expanded the facility to suit all of our needs. In January of 1992, my father went on radio for the first time. This was a big step for a very, very small work. But we didn't stay on radio for very long. Not back then, because we were about to go on TV. We went on television with the Key of David program in January of 1993. Just 3 years in, if you go back to what the Worldwide Church of God was saying when we started, or when my father and Mr. Amos were fired, they said it would amount to nothing. They compared us to a peanut shell floating on an ocean. And here, 3 years in, we're on TV. And I think it was the next year, during the summer, when we began our summer trips to the Middle East. One big one in particular. I can't remember if it was 95 or 96. But we traveled all across the Middle East. Egypt, Israel, Jordan, Turkey, Patmos. And film programs. I think we'd come back from those summer TV trips with 15 or 20 programs that Andrew Locher and others would edit and produce for television. So the work was growing in the mid-1990s. And at that same time, we were running out of books by Herbert Armstrong. Of course, we were producing our own materials. But all that we could do with Mr. Armstrong's writings was just try to get as many extra copies from used bookstores and such. But the work was growing, and the number of requests for Mystery of the Ages and other works by Herbert Armstrong increased, and we didn't have enough. And so we decided at the end of 1996 to print Mystery of the Ages. I think that initial print run was 20,000 copies. And we distributed every one of them in 1997. Well, that triggered the lawsuit with the Worldwide Church of God. And that litigation went on for 6 years. I won't get into all the details there. You can read about it in Raising the Ruins. But there were twists and turns. There were ups and downs. Through it all, we were printing other books, Incredible Human Potential, The Missing Dimension in Sex. And then for a time we had to stop printing them. Some judges were supporting us. Others were ruling against us. We were right in the midst of the damages trial, or about to go into the damages trial, when they called us up one day and said, hey, we'll go ahead and sell you all these works and be done with it. They wanted out. And all that was finalized on the anniversary of Herbert Armstrong's death, January 16th, 2003. Well, I kind of raced ahead. There were lots of things going on besides just the litigation from 97 to 2003. In 1998, we started Royal Vision, the other magazine, together with The Trumpet. In 1999, we added the toll-free number to the Key of David program, which increased our response levels by about 100%. They doubled as people started calling in to request all of the material that we make available for free. In the year 2000, even as the Ninth Circuit ruled against us, and our last recourse was to take it to the Supreme Court or submit it to the Supreme Court. We also purchased 160 acres. We wanted to raise the ruins. That's our job, right? To rebuild everything that God built through Herbert W. Armstrong. My father said at the time of that purchase, think about what could happen in a few years. I think God is kind of hurling the 160 acres out there to say, all right, now, here's the vision. He said there's something really wonderful going to happen in the near future. This was 160 acres of, well, as you can see on the YouTube stream right now, there was nothing on it. It was very raw, overgrown. It needed a lot of work. That was then, the year 2000, the late Tim Thompson. He's the one who negotiated the land purchase for the church. He said back in 2000, in a couple of years, you won't recognize this place. In 5 years, it'll be a paradise. He was spot on with that prediction. Look at the campus today. Look at the campus. Herbert W. Armstrong College and the Philadelphia Church of God headquarters. 160 acres. Well, we started God's College in the year 2001. And my father admonished us, those of us that were going to be teaching at the school. He said, if the college is done right, it can stir and motivate the entire church to get more and more behind the work. That's what we all need. To be like Christ in John 4, where he said, my meat is to do God's will and to finish the work. You know, these campaigns, by the way, they're every bit as helpful and motivating for church members as they are for trumpet readers, prospective members. It's an awesome sight to see. Red Deer, Spokane, and many other places that we've had a campaign, and you see God's people banding together in service to the world. Well, that same year, going back to 2001, the Supreme Court rejected our petition, so it didn't look so good in the lawsuit. And yet the work just kept going forward, growing and expanding. Rebuild everything that God built through Herbert Armstrong. Just takes a small group of humble people to fulfill this ruin-raising work. A small group of dedicated people. And more are coming in. They're going to be coming in as a result of these campaigns. Which just means there's a greater work to be done. That's why God brings us into the church. So that we can support the work. So that we can do the work. So that we can help and assist and support. Well, in 2002, even after some of the bad news with the lawsuit, we were adding dormitories and other structures on campus. And then the phone call at the end of that year about the Worldwide Church of God wanting to end the litigation. The lawsuit victory. That's what it was in 2003. And then all the additional buildings that were going up in 2004. That's the year we purchased the candelabras and the Steinway piano from Pasadena. Raising the ruins. A small group of humble people. A work of rebuilding everything that God built through Herbert Armstrong. In 2005, we opened up our Hall of Administration. It's hard to believe we've been in that building for 14 years. The new headquarters complex. We started producing the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence course in 2005. In 2006, we graduated our first senior class. We published Raising the Ruins. We started the Jerusalem dig. That was a big year, 2006. We started the relationship with Dr. Elat Mazar. And then the following year, in 2007, we decided to build God's house, Armstrong Auditorium, the crown jewel of the campus here, the $25 million structure. The whole campus revolves around it. That was in 2007, the decision. We started producing daily content for the Trumpet website back in 2007. In 2008, we broke ground on the house of God, God's house. We started Imperial Academy for the young people. And then we opened the doors to God's house in 2010. And we've seen growth in the work ever since with the literature, the booklets, doors swinging open. We had all the digs in the City of David from 2006 through to 2009, I think it was. And then the Ophel digs, the really big one in 2012. And then the follow-up in 2013, the videos that we were doing for Dr. Mazar. This is around the time, too, when we were looking for a campus in the UK, first at Brickett Wood, and then God eventually led us to Edstone, and we purchased Edstone by the end of the year in 2014, and then that led to a group of us transferring over there, students and faculty, in January of 2015. The same year that we went on television in the UK for the first time. Well, really, for the first time to a larger audience. We had gotten in there previous to that on some cable stations that really didn't have much coverage at all in the UK. But thanks to some of the changes in cable television over there, more opportunities opened up for TV in the UK for an expansion of the work in the UK. That same year, we started KPCG, this radio station, from right here at headquarters, Edmond, Oklahoma. That was in 2015. You know all about 2017. The new throne of David, the Jeroboam end. Well, you back up to 2016. It's hard to skip that. The Brexit vote. And then, of course, the U.S. presidential vote and all of the turmoil and the division in Britain and the United States. And then, as I say, the Jeroboam end, together with the new throne of David. And then April 12th, 2017, the G450. And then all of the campaigns, stepping up the campaigns, my father traveling all over the world. For campaigns, traveling to Edstone, traveling to Jerusalem several times. And then in 2018, just last year, we had our first campaign, our first public Bible lecture in the UK, starting in London last October. And following that, Belfast, Glasgow, Cardiff. And now here we are in 2019, and God's work continues to grow. This mission, as my father wrote about it just 2 years ago, to rebuild everything that God built through Herbert W. Armstrong. And so the work continues to expand. You know, there are still critics, dissidents, detractors today, even 30 years on, that say this work, God's work, is in crisis mode, that it's going under, that it's accumulating all this debt, that it can't last for much longer. It's exactly what those worldwide ministers were saying back in 1990, 1991. It's just a little peanut shell. There's always going to be critics. There's always going to be people complaining, criticizing, from the sidelines, mind you. And yet, look at what the work is doing. Another productive campaign just over the last 3 days in Red Deer, Canada, or Alberta, and then last night in Spokane, Washington. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a montage that you won't want to miss. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
In the summer of 1926, Herbert W. Armstrong asked himself, "Who am I? What am I? Why am I?" He tried to reason out the answer, but he couldn't. It was a mystery. Not long after that, he was confronted with a mind-disturbing challenge on the theory of evolution and the question of Sunday observance. After many months of virtually night and day intensive study, the answers were revealed with proof that was positive and absolute. These answers and many more are thoroughly explained in Mystery of the Ages, which is available to you at no cost or obligation. Time has proven Mystery of the Ages to be the most important book written in nearly 1,900 years. This world's humanity has been blinded to who, what, and why man is, how man appeared on Earth. Man has been mystified by his inability to solve his problems or find answers to the perplexing questions of mankind and the world he inhabits. All these mysteries were long ago revealed by the one supreme authority of all knowledge, but in a coded message, not allowed to be revealed and decoded until our time. In Mystery of the Ages, these great mysteries of life are thoroughly explained in vivid detail. Request your free copy of Mystery of the Ages today.
Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Well, this whole trip before tonight, we were in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. We were there for Sunday night. And then last night, I think we stayed there until about 11:30, talking to everybody, and then flew down here this afternoon. And this whole trip really has been a trip down memory lane for me and my wife. My wife and I have had our first date in 1995 in Red Deer, Alberta, of all places. So I didn't even think about this going into this this trip. But we, of course, were talking about our first date experience back in 1995. We were then later married in 1997. And then we come to Spokane, and this is my old stomping grounds as far as where I grew up as a youth. Leading up into middle way through my teen years, I came to Spokane, I think, two, maybe three times a year. I grew up in a little town called Pasco, about 2 hours southwest of here. So I can recall driving the Pasco to Spokane circuit multiple times each year as we came up here for youth activities. I distinctly remember when after Mount St. Helens blew, it left, I think there was like 4 or 5 inches of ash, especially around Pullman. I just remember that city in particular being dumped on. So every time that we took this trip, it looked like it had just snowed, even though it was in the middle of the summer, because of all of this ash that was there for years. I don't know if it might still be there. You'll have to tell me afterwards. But that was a long time ago. Back in the 1980s, we observed the Feast of Tabernacles right in this part of Spokane. The last one that I attended was in 1984. The Feast of Tabernacles is the fall Holy Day festival that's described in Leviticus 23. So we came here. My father was a minister in the Worldwide Church of God. He was assigned to Spokane every year. And so except for one or two transfers when I was young, we came up here every single year. And we met in the Seattle Coliseum, which has since been demolished, I guess. 1995, they tore that down and replaced it with the arena. And every year we'd have the family day at the feast right here at the Riverfront Park. So you have the distinctive pavilion. I guess there. I walked through there today because I had this traumatic experience where I witnessed this rollerblader that I knew, or he was with our group at the feast. He came down the hill at this park and he fell down and broke his arm. So I was just walking through the park this afternoon trying to find this place. I hadn't been there in 30 or 40 years. And I came upon this place, and I thought, that's it. I hate that that's my memory of the Riverfront Park. But it was definitely a trip down memory lane as I walked through that park. I looked through some church literature from Mr. Armstrong's church earlier this afternoon, and it said that the Spokane feast site in 1981, that they were expecting 6,000 people. 6,000 people for the Feast of Tabernacles observance. It's an enormous feast site. Thousands, and that's just one feast site. They had some feast sites in Florida that brought in 10 or 12,000 people. At the time of his death, Herbert Armstrong's death, there were over 100,000 people attending the Worldwide Church of God. The Plain Truth was going out to 8 million people worldwide. He was on more than 400 television stations, and this is back at the time when there were just basically the three networks. So a lot of people were familiar with his ministry, with his teachings, and he certainly impacted my life as a youth, being born into the Worldwide Church of God.
I liked it. Liked hearing the history behind Armstrong and the work that he's doing, and I think he's sharing the truth.
Powerful display of, you know, why the PCOG is so rooted in Mr. Armstrong's work, you know, because there's so much association there. You know, it's good to clarify why that is.
I've liked everything I've seen about you guys ever since I started reading The Trumpet. Like I was just telling him, I think the first thing I saw was Gerald's show, and then I ordered some literature, and they sent me The Trumpet, and I love the prophecy. It's like finally somebody's explaining what the Bible says other than the fact that I'm a sinner, because I know that.
Yeah. It's the first time I've seen him live here, so pretty awesome. Some of you travel all the way from Britain or anywhere to come out and hear this, because Spokane used to have a church membership of almost 350. Coeur d'Alene, Post Falls, a little bit, maybe 40 or 50.
I loved it. It's I drove 212 miles to get here from Lakeside, Montana, and I found that Gerald Fleury's magazine was worthy of the invitation to come and see, because I've been reading it now for a year and a half. And I really appreciate it, sir, that you gave us a free magazine. And I find a lot of that to be alarmingly truthful.
I miss the Northwest. I wish I could take the drive from Spokane down to Pasco. Now, that would be a trip down memory lane. Boring? Come on, that was my youth. Don't destroy my memory.